Hello, and welcome to this second episode of Season 5 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I'm Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
Now, a week ago, Graham, HMRC, that's Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, the central tax agency in the UK, issued guidance relating to trust and company service providers. And I thought it might be a good opportunity to bring listeners up to speed with these important areas.
That sounds very good, Ray. Why is it HMRC that's issuing this guidance, though, rather than the FCA?
That's because although the FCA supervises most kinds of regulated business in the UK, it's HMRC, actually, who supervise trust and corporate service providers.
And they set similar standards for the firms they supervise to those the FCA sets for banks and others, don't they?
Yeah, those requirements are established largely in law, and TCSPs are obliged entities in the legislation, so the obligations are broadly common.
So that means that TCSPs are expected to identify their customers and beneficial owners. They have to conduct appropriate due diligence after deciding what due diligence is appropriate, I guess, and establish policies, procedures and controls for dealing with intermediaries and relying on due diligence performed by others.
Yep, pretty standard stuff.
But is it worth thinking about the risks here, Ray? I mean, the risks for a trust and corporate service provider are different, aren't they, from the risks that other obliged entities like banks or casinos or art dealers have to contend with?
Yes, they are. And HMRC sets out what types of higher and lower risk features of these businesses might be. But we're not just talking about a single type of business. The TCSP label applies to quite a wide range of services with different risk characteristics.
Okay, so where shall we start then?
Well, I think most people would view the traditional company formation agent business as the archetype here. The company formation agent creates corporate entities on behalf of people setting up in business. That might be done to order, or they might supply ready-made company entities that the client can buy and then repurpose.
Okay, the idea of the ready-made company is why so often when you look at the records for a company, its earliest directors are nominees with multiple directorships all at the same corporate address. Now, these are the agent's own nominee directors who, when the ready-made company is sold, transfer ownership to the purchasing client's own people. And it's why you might see 2 or 3 years of dormant accounts at the start.
Hmm. Now, HMRC distinguishes between formations to order and sales of ready-made companies, seeing the latter as higher risk from a financial crime standpoint.
Yes, and they list other higher risk characteristics too, suggesting that wholesale operations and supply to offshore intermediaries carries a higher risk than retail sale to UK-based clients or through UK intermediaries.
Can we spell it out here, though, Graham? Risk of what?
Well, the risk of facilitating financial crime. The risk that forming or supplying these entities will enable bad actors to launder money or to evade tax or to finance terrorism.
Makes sense, particularly bearing in mind what we've seen in our work with corporate entities being used on an often industrial scale to perpetrate financial crime across the world.
It does. And HMRC themselves note in their guidance that supply of a large number of companies at the same time or in close succession might just be risky, and that the companies may be used to open a large number of bank accounts across jurisdictions to facilitate the movement of funds.
Wouldn't surprise me at all. And they also point out that client requests for aged rather than newly formed companies might be a red flag, possibly fraudsters looking for something that gives a false impression of an established business.
Okay, then. Looking beyond mere formation of companies, there are other services that can raise more risks.
And what are those services?
Well, one is the provision of nominee directors, and that's where the TCSP provides entities or individuals to act as directors or officers of the client's company on behalf of the client's real controllers.
And what's the point of that?
Well, it can be useful when a company is being organised and things put in place to make the admin easier, and it can help when a company is involved in merger negotiations to have a neutral party protecting the company property, while the interested parties bargain. HMRC sees these as low-risk services.
But where the nominee director service is designed to preserve anonymous or confidential ownership, they see it as carrying a higher risk, especially where the service provider is doing this in multiple companies with common actual owners or over an extended period of time that goes way beyond the formation stage.
And I think you'd see their point, wouldn't you?
Yes, absolutely. That's not to say there's necessarily shenanigans afoot, but the fact that true ownership is thereby obscured and that this appears to be intentional is a fairly obvious red flag and needs to be controlled for.
Okay, how?
Well, HMRC suggests that a firm providing nominee director services in those higher risk scenarios would want to be satisfied that they knew on whose behalf they were acting. For instance, is there a disbarred director lurking behind the scenes?
So careful screening would be important.
Well, I'd say so, yeah.
Right, and nominee services can apply to shareholders too, can't they? Not just directors.
Yes, and similar considerations apply, but there are some low-risk situations here, like shares held as nominees by investment management companies running discretionary investment portfolios, and short-term nominee shareholdings during company formation that are transferred when the company is established.
Okay, but again, anything that would let someone maintain anonymous ownership could be in place to disguise the misuse of funds, or perhaps to conceal a controlling interest that, if known, would raise questions.
Absolutely. And you often see TCSPs providing company secretarial services, don't you? Which sounds curiously old-fashioned, I always think.
Well, to be honest, it's quite an antiquated exercise. Company secretaries used to be far more widely required than they are these days. Most will be for public limited companies, PLCs, or large private companies where the ownership is widely distributed. And these are lower risk situations from a financial crime point of view anyway.
And what is the role of a company secretary?
Well, they're responsible for the statutory compliance obligations of a corporate entity, so filings and disclosures.
And in what situations does HMRC suggest these services might carry an elevated risk?
HMRC says this might be the case where the TCSP is providing the service to companies with non-UK beneficial owners. It says firms should also think carefully about offering such services for non-UK entities where other risks come into play, like country risks and not having a local presence in the entity's home jurisdiction.
Well, that seems pretty sensible.
I'd say so. I suppose the last main corporate service area is that of virtual office provision.
Now, this is like an answering service and an accommodation address combined, isn't it? It gives you what looks like a physical presence here without you actually needing to have one.
It's exactly that, Ray. And actually, this is fundamentally quite dangerous if there is an element of deception involved.
But there are legitimate reasons to do this, aren't there? Think about someone running an international consulting operation who might need to be on a client site in Asia, but doesn't want to miss out on inquiries from, say, the US. But then again, they don't want the expense of establishing an office there with full-time staff.
Yeah, so I suppose what the guidance is saying to the TCSP is know your client, understand their business and what they're looking to achieve. Satisfy yourself that there aren't significant risks that they're up to no good and that they're going to make you complicit, ultimately.
I think that's exactly right, Graham.
So what might be the contrary indicators for this sort of service, the red flags?
Well, one is volume. If you're getting a busload of mail and messages that you're forwarding in big batches, then that's an issue because it looks like there's every justification then to have an actual rather than a virtual presence.
Yeah, I can see that. Anything else?
One that HMRC mentions is when you're providing actual office space under a serviced office agreement, but the client rarely actually attends the premises, or it looks like they're using it for purposes other than their purported business, or they start using it properly and then it just turns into a forwarding mailbox.
So basically, if there's a physical presence, if your client is actually turning up, collecting mail regularly and using the office space as intended, that's likely to be low risk.
Indeed.
Okay, now so far we've looked at the CSP parts of TCSP, but what about the trust services?
Well, this relates to the provision to trust clients of professional trustees.
Isn't that usually a service that lawyers provide?
Often, yes, but people other than lawyers can be professional trustees. Lawyers are regulated when providing that service separately in the UK through the Solicitors Regulatory Authority. But others offering professional trusteeships will fall under the TCSP umbrella.
Okay, then. So we're talking about somebody who isn't connected to the settlor or the beneficiaries being hired to manage the trust professionally. Is that what it is?
Typically, that's exactly it, Graham. Yeah. If they're connected to the settlor or beneficiaries, then that might be a red flag in itself because that touches on the independence of the trustee.
Okay, so independence would be a lower risk indicator. Mm. What else? Mm-hmm.
Well, the type of trust is relevant too. When you think about lower risk trusts, you generally think about things like pension schemes and registered charities, life interest trusts or trusts for share schemes or to protect the interests of disabled people.
And one of the features that makes these lower risk is that the source of funds is likely to be clear, isn't it?
Absolutely, Graham. The professional trustee would need to have a good understanding of the trust's source of wealth. If it's a private trust, that will mean knowing the settlor's source of wealth.
Which could be complicated, especially if the settlor is long dead.
Complicated but crucial, Graham, as Wolfsburg make clear in their beneficial ownership FAQ.
Indeed. So a complex or unclear source of wealth would indicate a higher risk then?
Well, complexity isn't a problem so long as you understand it and it's credible. Uncertainty, though, would be a risk indicator, yes.
What else might be?
HMRC calls out the settlor or a beneficiary or someone else having significant control over the assets or income of the trust.
Well, that makes sense. If the trustee doesn't have independence and an entirely free hand, there is potential for misuse of the funds.
Let's come back to charity trusts, Graham, because although these are generally low risk, there are some risk issues.
Yes, especially if this is a newly established charity or if the charitable aims and objects aren't clear and precise.
And it wouldn't be unknown for a charity to be used to divert legitimate donations to fund terrorism.
Indeed, Ray. So TCSPs acting as trustees to charitable trusts would need good insight into those aspects of the charity, including those receiving charitable benefits.
Absolutely right. And one other point that HMRC makes is that whilst it's rare to see UK trusts used to launder money, there is experience of offshore trusts being so used quite widely. Mm. So a TCSP offering offshore trustee services would need to view this as a higher risk business line and apply appropriate additional controls.
Gotcha.
One final point that's made by HMRC is that TCSPs need to think about relationships where they are providing multiple services to the same client.
And why is that, Ray?
Well, if you think about it, Graham, each of the services we've spoken about distances the beneficial owner or controller from the legal entity they own or control. Layering these services exacerbates this.
And if this is being directed by agents outside of the UK, then this adds a further level of obscuring, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Although there can be good reasons for using these services in combination, there can be nefarious ones too.
And the question is, how do you tell which is in play?
Well, it's a common question in our work, isn't it? What do we normally advise?
Well, we tell banks and other firms to look at the arrangements their clients are putting in place and based on their experience and judgment, and possibly asking some more questions, determine whether there are clear commercial reasons behind their use.
Yes, and if there aren't, then to be appropriately suspicious, or at least cautious. Well, HMRC give exactly the same guidance.
So, that has been an interesting delve into the world of trust and corporate service providers, Ray. And if listeners want to read the guidance, where should they go?
Well, Googling HMRC TCSP will find it, Graham.
Great. So, what is next for us?
Well, Graham, it's less than a month now to the Dark Money Conference.
Oh, yes.
So I thought it might be a good idea to spend an episode looking at what we're hoping for from the conference, how it will all work, and why people might want to sign up to attend.
That's a very good idea, Ray. And if they do want to sign up to attend, how can they do that?
Well, they can do it by going to the Dark Money Conference website. A Google will find them that fairly straightforwardly, I would suggest.
And they're incredibly reasonably priced tickets, as it's a first run of an online event, isn't it?
Very much so.
Good. Well, let's do that then.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.